Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Five persons, including actress Sharon Tate, were found dead at the home of Miss Tate and her husband, screen director Roman Polanski.
The whole thing is very mysterious, but this is what I know.
Authorities say the menacing letter received yesterday by a Vallejo newspaper was not sent by the infamous Zodiac killer. Betsy Gebhardt has details.
That Area 51, the secret Air Force base in Nevada, actually exists.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas.
He's been called the East Side Rapist. He's been called the Visalia Ransacker, the original Night Stalker, and the Golden State Killer.
You have now entered into the House of Mystery, the best in true crime, conspiracy, and alternative history, with Al Warren and Kevin Thompson. KCAA, the stations that leave no listener behind. Broadcasting on 1050 AM, 102.3 FM, and 106.5 FM. The trifecta of talk radio for Southern California.
Welcome back to the House of Mystery here on KKNW 1150 AM Seattle and KCAA 106.5 FM Los Angeles. I'm your host today, Al Warren. Joining me, of course, is Kev Thompson.
Good day, Al. How are you?
It's good. I was getting worried. I thought you fell asleep.
I may have. I don't know.
Yeah, you're doing an all-nighter. So the smoke has cleared in the western of the United States, and it's sunny first time in a month, and it's a good day. But don't walk your dog if you're an 8 year old.
You're likely to end up needing bond money.
Yeah, yeah, you'll be put in jail only in America.
That still confuses me. Well, I mean, what's the crime? I mean, walking while 8. I mean.
Land of the free. Yeah, well, what is it? Day like 500 on the crazy train that we've been on now. So,
and it just keeps getting better.
Yeah, it keeps getting better. And so now joining us actually from one of the same countries in the world. It's called Australia, and it's not down under. We are down under. They are up over. So I want people to realize that. So here we go. We've got one of the true great ones from Australia, too, like the for books and true crime, Amanda Howard. How are you today?
Hi, Al. Hi, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
So how is it down in Australia? Anything wild going on? You're going into summer next, aren't you?
Spring's coming, yes. Yeah. So it's I don't know in Fahrenheit, but it's 0 degrees here this morning. So it's quite a chilly one. We've had winter just give us a last little week of don't forget I was here apparently, because we had a quite warm winter, which is pretty normal for us.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, it's all right. I understand Celsius myself because I have a place up in Canada, so we're on the same side of the same world.
Yeah. I'm usually pretty good, but I was not prepared for a 6 a.m. call to talk about Fahrenheit to Celsius.
Yeah, I know. It's only because I have to go back and forth. I need to know both.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise, you know, and the worst thing in the world, I'll tell you, don't ever tell an American, well, come on, it's, you know, it's 30 degrees. Come on up. And then they head up wearing, like heavy rain, you know, they're ready for snow and all. They're thinking 30 degrees freezing and it's snow and they don't realize it's really like 90 plus.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I know that, I know our summers, we get to about 45 degrees here and that is, about 100, 110. Yeah. So I know that much.
Yeah.
Now, how does that happen on a flat earth?
Kevin, oh, that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah, Kevin is our conspiracy guy, so you know.
Oh, I love conspiracies.
Oh, then you can talk to him for hours. He's got lots of them, you know.
Oh, I love them.
Yeah. I always have a good laugh at them too myself. And we're hoping to get Alex Jones on the show soon.
Oh wow! Yes. Fantastic. Yes. Well, that'll be interesting.
Yeah, that it certainly is. I mean, it, you know, he's a character. Wow. So how did you get into such a sweet lady, get into to writing stories about murder?
Well, actually, I was going to stay a sweet lady. I was actually going to be a singer and a dancer when I was younger. And Silence of the Lambs actually changed my life. So I read the book and then we had an attempt at profiling here in Sydney with a serial killer that was killing old ladies. And they got it completely and utterly wrong. But when we arrested the guy, and he was a 50-year-old man with a wife and two daughters, I was totally and utterly hooked from then on. So I've spent the last 30 years talking to serial killers. So very, very big change from, you know, sequins and spotlights to serial killers and rape. But that's what happened.
Well, you know, I wear my sequins every time I talk to a serial killer. So you can make the best of both worlds, right?
It'll get you noticed.
I prefer something silky myself.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Yeah. Well, there you go. See, we've got it made. There's a making for a new show on Discovery.
I can see the boy band choreography now.
You know, hey, they've got everything else on TV. My God, it wouldn't surprise me. Wow, I just can't believe it. Now, so when you actually, who's the scariest person you've ever met as far as serial killers?
Well, I don't find them so scary, and I think that's part of the issue. Everyone expects these guys to be horrifying and standing over you and, you know, coming at you in prisons, but you're so protected. Granted, you can often sit in a waiting room and you think, oh, well, I know that rapist and I know that killer, and so there is a bit of that, and if there was an uprising, that would be scary. But most of them are actually quite sedate and they are very polite, and I think it's because by the time I meet with them, there's so many rules that come into play, and I don't let them play stupid games, and those that get sexually explicit and all of that, they get shut down very, very quickly. So the cat and mouse game, I like to be the cat.
Yeah. I sort of enjoy it when they get into that. But do you, I want to know for you, aren't you worried about the manipulation? Because some of them, it's about what they can get from you. So when they agree to talk to you, a lot of times they're looking to achieve something through you, right?
Absolutely.
And some of them are very keen, and quite a few often they're not. They're just normal. But there's a few. And does that worry you that they'll get inside your head and sort of mess with you a little?
It's something that I've actually had to learn to do, and it's something I've learned from a lot of serial killers, is I've learned to compartmentalize what they do and what they say. And I always keep it in mind that these killers are just that. They're killers, they're monsters, they're manipulative. They like to play these games. And so it's about making sure that what they say and what they mean is two very different things, and to be able to read between the lines, because yeah, they always have an agenda, and so you have to stay one step ahead of it, because it can get into your head. I mean, the amount of threats I've had over the years, and I've had families of killers come at me, I've had groupies come at me, and it can be quite terrifying. So it's that there has been times I've thought, why the hell do I do this?
Right, right. Go back to dancing.
Absolutely. I still dance.
Well, but that's kind of the thing I mean. So like, so when that's happening to you and you're thinking, oh man, what am I got myself into? Like, what can I do? What does that do to you? And how does that change you for the next time you get involved in one of these, crime writings?
It can take me to some very dark places. And, my husband, though he's now passed away, he could see it happening. He could see when I was going down that dark tunnel and, you know, staring into the abyss, as they say. And sometimes you have to come up for air, and sometimes I wouldn't. I would keep going and I would keep going, and I would get angry and I would get mad at the kids, and I would get to a point, I think, everything is so dark and this world is horrible and what am I doing and all of that. And so it's about finding the balance, and that's why I still dance, and that's why I have a love for really trashy TV. Like, there's several Housewives I like to watch and things like that. And some of those are more
punishment.
Well, some of those are more psychopathic than the killers I talk to, let's face it.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's about finding the balance, because there has been times that it has been so dark. I wrote a book a couple of years ago on child sex predators, and the things I saw and the images of children in positions of abuse and everything, I thought, what am I doing? Like, why am I going here? What can I get out of this? But I eventually came through the other side of it and realized that it is a learning tool. The book is used as a textbook in criminology courses here. And so it's just sometimes about finding where you go with this and the reasons that I continue.
Yeah. You're a fascinating person, and this is somewhat something that I'd love to ask for someone like you. One of the books I wrote a while back was about the serial killers in Australia. The thought I had behind the book was more about mass shootings and serial killers and how the gun laws changed your country.
Yes.
So after the that last mass shooting and
Port Arthur.
Yep. Right. Yeah, and the government. So I wrote about that story, and then coming out of it, the way you guys confiscated the guns and changed the laws, and the stories, so this is it. I hear stories in the U.S. on both sides. Or when I'm in Canada, I hear that things have gone really well for Australia. You've had no mass shootings since. Everything's hunky-dory. In the U.S., they say, no, that's not true. It's fake news, whatever. But coming from you, you're down there. You're in Australia. You're in this business. How has it affected the country in reality?
We still have gun crime, and we always will, because there is still illegal guns on the streets. But it isn't something like we hear about the States, that you walk into Walmart packing heat. You know, to us, you don't do that.
We
don't have a love of guns, and we don't have a right to bear arms and all of that sort of stuff, though. The right to bear arms, I always think holding a teddy bear's arms, but that's a whole different thing. But I was actually part of the working group that created the gun buyback scheme that we had. So I was working for the police service at the time and was part of that law. So it's something that I think we did it so quickly, and the emotions that happened, because we'd had the Strathfield shooting a couple of years earlier as well, and that was the first time that we increased our gun laws, because Wade Franken went into a shopping centre and shot the place up. And so we stopped the larger semi-automatic weapons, but then after Port Arthur we went even more stringent, and basically most guns were taken away unless you were in a gun club. But, I mean, there's still shootings, and we have a bit of gangland wars that happen over turf and everything. We have groups of that. There's a couple of suburbs local to here that do have a lot of shootings. But it's like to hear about a shooting, it's not seven a day. It's one a month that a bat.
Yeah. So in the case...
You know, it's worked, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but it so in overall, it was a good move for Australia as a country.
I mean, yes and no, because yes, it sort of made those laws to prevent us in the future, but it wasn't preventing us from something that was a massive scar on our country. It wasn't something that was happening all the time anyway. So it was sort of about creating the laws to basically prevent us becoming like the US, but, you know, I don't think we would have ever done that. But it did relinquish some of the guns that might have found their way to the streets that could have had dire consequences, but I really don't think that we would have had such mass shootings anyway.
Right. Now, do you think that's made an effect on serial killers?
Oh, I'll tell you what, this is the worst country to be in for serial killer expert. I'll tell you what's bad for business. We really don't have a great deal of serial killers here, and which is a good thing for most people except for me who writes and talks about it.
Well, we can send a few over, but we've got an overabundance.
No, it's all good. It's all good. I mean, we have pockets of killings that have remained unsolved that I think might be serial killers, and that there's a couple of cases I am watching. But our serial killers seem to be older than the US. Like, ours sort of hit about 45 to 55, which is quite odd and a strange statistic that I'm still watching and trying to understand why our guys are older. But Our serial killers are few and far between, but they seem to go quite brutal. They have, you know, 5 to 10 victims usually, and it's we really torture our victims, which is quite horrific when you think about cases like the Snowtown Bank killings, where they put people in tubs like Jeffrey Dahmer did, but they were killing and torturing their victims before they were put into these tubs. But we have only so few, and I think it's because we're actually catching these people quite quickly, because killings in this country are quite low, that I think we have the focus that we have a good clearance rate, because we don't have shootings happening seven times a day and stuff like that.
Right, yeah. So, wow. Now, you were writing, I was just realizing, your book, A History on the Hanged. And, and I know you're bringing up a lot of, things that, people probably don't realize. Like when you say that, at times animals were also hanged with their human masters. I've never even thought about that. What happens to the dog? And they actually hang them.
Yes, there's been lots of animals throughout history that have been hanged, including there's an elephant in the United States that was hanged for killing two of her trainers. So that's a horrific case, because it failed the first time. They had to hang her twice. But yes, throughout history, animals were charged with human crimes. So there was a pig that was hanged for eating a baby because it had broken into the house and went looking for food and killed the baby. And so it went to trial, and people had stood up, you know, giving good character references, and there was a defense team.
Yeah, like, oh, really?
Like, it went fully fledged. It was massive the way that they did these trials throughout history.
I mean, I can understand that. My daughter's reading Charlotte's Web right now. But wow. I mean, a whole trial for an animal.
Yes, many, many of them. There was chickens that have been hanged. So horses, cows, the whole lot.
But how can you convict and hang them if they are not aware of what they've done? Like, they're not aware of their crime.
Exactly. Yeah. So it makes it a farce, but still we were killing animals for doing that was sort of their nature to do. So I think it just proved how ridiculous criminal history became for quite a while. I mean, yeah, you know, we're talking about an 8-year-old being arrested for walking a dog. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
Thankfully, it's this century and not last century.
Yeah, that's today, or you know, a couple of days ago.
Yeah, but last century they would have put her down.
Yep, both of them.
Yeah, so I guess things are getting better. Everyone, things are better.
It's the way you look at it, I guess.
Yeah, I guess it's what side of the hanging rope you're looking at it from.
But so last time we spoke, though, we were talking about hangings and lynchings. And there's a misconception that if you survived the hanging, you were actually let go. But you've corrected that.
Yes, not. It wasn't always the case. There was a few people that were given a pardon when the rope snapped or they revived afterwards. But there were some people that were taken back up. They reset the noose, they reset the trapdoor and tried a couple more times until they were successful. So it's horrific, cruel and unusual punishment.
Wow.
And this, you got me with this. That there was actually a gentleman that was hanged. They assumed that he was dead. He's on the coroner's slab, and he wakes up, and the doctor did what?
He stabbed him. So it was during a – sorry, I shouldn't have laughed. I'm so sorry. I'm a horrible
That's
person.
That's all right.
I'm
going I do all the time. Anyway.
It's gallows humor.
It is.
Get it?
Yeah. So what happened was this man was actually on the slab in a university. So, you know, several student doctors hanging around watching them ready to do the dissection. And he sat up and started breathing. And the doctor said, well, we're not wasting a class today, and stabbed the man so he died. And so they could continue with their autopsy. So
yeah, did the doctor get charged then or no?
No, because it was sort of went into folklore, and it's happened a couple of times. There was a German guy that it happened to, there was a guy in England, and there was another one somewhere else, likely the US. So it's happened a few times. One of them got punched in the head until he died. So,
oh my goodness.
Yeah, so they really wanted their corpses for dissection, and so this is how they usually got them. And so when the hanging had actually failed, they had to take matters into their own hands.
Wow.
So Amanda, that leads me to this concept then. In today's society, or let's just say the last couple hundred years, does conviction determine the value of your life?
No, because you could get executed for stealing bread. You can get executed for looking at your next door neighbour. I mean, there's some horrific cases in the US. There's a young boy that was killed and has since been exonerated, purely because he was the last person seen talking to a young white girl, and he was a young black boy. And they killed him purely assuming that he was the guy that had killed her. And so throughout history, they didn't need evidence. They didn't need to make sure that they had the right person. And there was a young siblings, a boy and a girl. They were 8 and 10 or 8 and 12. And they were hanged for stealing bread because they were starving. And yeah, it's just horrific. And Napoleon actually said that you are more likely to be executed for your daily life than you are not to be executed, because there were so many laws that ended with the death penalty being the punishment that it became a place that it was epidemic that they were executing these people, because you could get done for stealing a pair of shoes.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, it's kind of unusual, isn't it? The whole system. What was your biggest surprise when you were writing Rope, the history of the hanged? What was the thing that you learned that you were like, wow?
The whole book was shocking. I expected it to be, you know, that there was a crime that happened and someone got hanged. But to find out that people would be swinging from the rope for days and they would still be alive because of the structure of their throat prevented them from dying, The amount of decapitations that have happened throughout history. I mean, there's Black Jack Ketchum in the US, who people took photos of, and they actually sold postcards later of people posing with his dead body, with his head in front of him, because it was such a fantastic thing that had happened.
Wow. Well, do you think we've changed that much? I mean, in the way that we're processing the convicted for murder, but in the sense that if we had a pay-per-view of someone that was to be hanged for a crime they did, don't you think it'll do well?
It'd be a bestseller, I think. I really think that people would watch it. Literally, they could probably charge $1,000 and people would still pay it. I think that we all slow down at car accidents. We watch the ambulances fly past. These days, you see so many people standing around, people having fights and things like that, and they've all got their cameras out. We are now a society that is so voyeuristic to crime. And, you know, basically, you hear about a crime these days and you can get on the internet and find someone has filmed it. So, which can be good and bad, you know, with the US, there's been some issues with police shooting people that, you know, there's a lot of film of that. I think sometimes we need to put down our phones and help people. But yeah. I think if we put executions on TV, I think a lot of people would watch it. That's for sure.
Yeah. And that's my feeling too. My impression is that, but if we do that as a general society, if we're in a, you know, you could do a pay-per-view boxing and then you could do a pay-per-view so-and-so is getting hanged today and do really well with it. If it's as popular as what sports would be, then what is that saying about us and how we feel about death and how we feel about the murders? You know what I'm saying? Because putting someone to death in a way where we're watching them and making a business out of it, is that not kind of the same as the person who murdered someone?
Absolutely. I don't understand the concept of killing someone because they've killed someone. I think it's not used as a deterrent. People and serial killers will say this: I didn't think about Joe Blow that they got executed while I was killing my victims. They don't do that, and no one would. People think that they're not going to get caught for a start. But I think it could have a secondary effect that we actually look at ourselves and think, what the hell are we doing? That we've gone back to what we did 150 years ago, 100 years ago, where it become a public holiday and people would actually go and watch these events happen. They had to put them behind prison walls because people were tearing the corpses apart. They were trying to cut off hands and they were tearing clothes for souvenirs.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one of a kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
And, you know, there would be riots and, you know, there was thousands of people that turned up at the Tyburn Tree in England to watch these events. It became a whole market fair with people selling effigies and all of this sort of stuff that was happening. And it lost its fear that people were having parties rather than realizing that there was condemned people that were about to lose their lives. And back then it was for smaller crimes as well as killings, but they were being done for, you know, stealing, you know, a £1 note or stealing some bread or some shoes or something like that. So if we were to do that again now, it would become that sort of atmosphere again. And, you know, we all sat up, and I did at 3 a.m. to watch the O.J. Simpson when he was found not guilty. I mean, I got up and watched that. So would I get up and watch an execution? I think people would. Think I would, but I don't know how far that would go. That I think it would sort of lend itself to the decay of society once again, to understand what is going on and why do we think that we want to see this.
Well, has it really changed? Let's go back. I remember speaking to you about this the last time when we spoke, and I got to thinking about it. Let's go way back. Let's look at gladiator sports.
Mm-hmm.
And what a festive event that turned into.
Mm-hmm. And there was times that the emperors, that they would run out of victims to throw into the pits for the lions and the gladiators to kill, that they would actually go through the auditorium and take out people from the audience and say, throw them in.
Wow.
You better be in a good seat.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I guess the nosebleed section takes on a whole new meaning.
Literally.
Well, you know, I'm thinking about this in the terms of, you know, if we were to watch this, would it become itself, its own entity in itself, become a sport that relies on its own popularity and becomes addictive in that own, its own nature? Or would it be a deterrent? Or would it be a decay in society, as you say? There's so many questions there.
Well honestly, I mean... Sorry, Kevin.
It depends on what direction we take it in. I mean, this is going to sound silly, but let's look at Running Man.
Yep.
Kind of like Amanda just said, you know, we run out of criminals that are on death row, so let's start convicting. You know, it would have a massive effect on society, not just entertainment, and it would completely change the way we deal out justice.
Well, yeah, well, exactly. I mean, first of all, people wouldn't be sitting on death row for 30 years. I think they would clear the decks very, very quickly. And it would be about who would get the bigger bang for the buck, which is then about, then we do things like these blood sports and Hunger Games and that sort of thing, where they pit killers against each other. And, I mean, there's a whole concept there that I could think I might write a book about, but I think Stephen King did.
Yeah.
But... I think that that's where that could all go, that it would become a blood sport, and it would be about how do you get the next set of ratings, because how many people are going to watch you know, a lethal injection? Will they bring back the hangings? Will they bring back the guillotine? Will they, you know, increase? And then, as you said, once we don't have enough serial killers in that in prison that are on death row, who goes next?
Yeah. Yeah. Then you start picking groups that you don't like.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, conservatives.
We've been there before.
And so, yeah, it's just an interesting concept about it, but I still don't know how it relates. I think that society in itself is kind of, it kind of scares me on how people would behave.
Well, as I said, people stand on the street now and film people being raped and beaten and all horrible things, and that there's a lot of films I've seen that have come out of a lot of Asian countries where people have taken vigilantism to murder. So they've actually gone out and beaten someone until they're dead. And I mean, if we look at the ISIS tapes that are now coming out, they're so professionally produced with slow-mo and all of this sort of stuff that's happening. They're feeding that, and I think it's a horrific thing that's out there, but there is a market for it. And, you know, I think it just takes us back to where we were when we were hanging people in the streets, you know, centuries ago.
Well, do you think that it's because there is so much violence that we've become desensitized to it, but at a primal level, it still excites us. You know, like, for example, your life means nothing to me, so while you're being killed, I'm going to stand here and videotape it. Well, why am I standing here videotaping it all? It's because it affects me at a primal level. But we're sitting here talking about moral judgments. Why won't you go help that person? You know, I've seen it so many times, it don't bother me no more.
Mm-hmm. And I think that does happen. I mean, there was a shooting this week in the US where there was, and I'm going to say this horrifically, only three victims. And so people are being desensitized, because when you see like the Las Vegas shooting where there's hundreds, you know, it's sort of, we sort of, desensitized to some things because other things are worse. And so how far do we go before what's the worst of the worst? You know, do we have these gladiator sports where we put, you know, Jeffrey Dahmer and John Wayne Gacy into an arena and pay-per-view it? You know, this is something that could definitely happen if, you know, because there's a lot of, you know, Fox and all of that out there. I shouldn't probably say that. That would do this if they didn't realize that there would be a lot of people out there. And thankfully, there is people that are politically correct, and I'm not one of them, that would probably have an outcry that would hopefully keep us down. But if we look at the US and the gun laws with all these shootings that happen and things like Columbine, and we feel that a right to have guns is more important than the right to have our children live. I mean, what stops them going to that next thing of pay-per-view death penalty? I mean, I've heard it spoken about. I have seen so many pictures of executions throughout the centuries. You can watch guillotines on YouTube.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so it's out there. So it's about, you know, what stops them doing it? I have no idea.
Yeah. Well, they figure out a way to tax it, and then they'll get it going.
Oh, absolutely. That's all it needs.
You know, they can get it going. And so who was the, I hate to say that word, favorite, but who was the most interesting person that you've met on death row?
Bobby Joe Long's very interesting. He's in Florida. We had a lot of conversations about his arrest. Because when he was arrested, he'd actually gone to a cinema, and when he come out, there was like snipers and all of that hanging around waiting to arrest him. And he's like, I don't know why they bothered to do that, because I was done and I was right to go with them calmly. I said, you know, you'd killed 9 women by this point. They weren't taking chances. And he doesn't understand that concept. So it's really interesting sometimes to see things from their perspective. Like his response about sharing a cell with Ted Bundy was that he was a really nice guy. You know?
Yeah.
Well, he was. I, and I'm not saying that in a sick way.
No,
they do appear to be nice people because that's part of their camouflage. If I just walk around looking like some crazy serial killer, I'm not going to get the victims. So
that's what I always say. Yep. It's crazy that people go, oh, look at him. He looks like a serial killer. Look at his eyes. It's like, no, wrong.
You're looking in the wrong area. Look at the bloody knife in his hand.
Yeah.
But now you said something that caught my attention, that this killer said, well, I don't understand why they had such a police presence because I was done and I was ready to, you know, go with them willingly. Now, when he says he was done, you're right. We as law enforcement are not going to take the chance.
Yeah.
But let's look at his last three or four kills. Did he do it in a sloppy manner in order to get caught? And that's why he considered himself done. I don't have the guts to turn myself in, so I'm just going to get real sloppy so that they'll chase me down and wait for me outside of a theater.
Well, pretty much. I mean, his last victim, he let go. So you sort of know that the gig's up once a victim's gotten away. So I think, you know, you sort of have to resign yourself to the fact that it's over. And so he wasn't going to go down in a blaze of glory like some do. But he said, you know, basically I just stood there and said, yeah, you've got me, so let's go. Of course, he's still going through appeals and all of that because now he didn't do it, of course. But
well, that's a lot the of attorney, say that's so, the attorney talking.
Yeah. There's so many innocent people in prison, apparently. I speak to a lot of them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they like the, you know, there's, again, we're talking about something primal. They appreciate the limelight. And yes. Then when the attorneys get to them, because when you get the death penalty, generally in most states, it's an automatic appeal.
Yes. Yeah, that's crazy.
And the attorney is like, well, let's drag this out because then I get a little bit more money.
Yeah.
So you were innocent, right? Well, yeah. No. Yes, you were innocent.
Exactly. Yeah. And I can't believe it. I mean, I don't understand people being on death row for 30, 40 years and it's happening. I mean, there was a guy executed this week that had been on it since 1979. It's always because of the process. And I'm not saying that we should kill them the next week like the Ukraine or China does, but it makes me wonder sometimes, why are they going through all of this effort and everything when a lot of these people die before they're executed?
Yeah,
it's a crazy sentence. Yeah, I mean, Lawrence Bideker's not long for this world, and he's been on death row for 30, 40 years now, I think it is. It's crazy.
Yeah. So I think it's political, but I think a lot of the last guy I wrote about has been on death row for over 20 years, and I think that a lot of it is they get the automatic appeal, and by the time it gets to a Supreme Court, they always overturn the, because they'll never put someone to death when your Supreme Court doesn't believe in it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a formality, but it goes over and over and over for years, and it's really hard to bring them to death.
Yeah, so why have the death penalty? Just they're in prison for life. I mean, we have a sentence here that life means life. So you come out feet first.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
that's right.
And you don't get parole and, you know, you can't be downgraded, you're done. People like Ivan Milat, who's a local serial killer here, will not get out of prison until he's dead.
Right. Yeah, last day is last breath.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's an interesting concept, but I think a lot of it's just caught in politics now, and we're sort of doing the spin around, and nothing's really happening with any of these prisoners.
No. But they still get to go through all of these court appeals, and it's a lot of cost.
Yeah,
and you wouldn't believe the treatment a lot of them get in prison or jail.
Oh, yes, I do. We have a few here that have computers and TVs and Xboxes and all of that sort of stuff.
They have Twitter accounts. They have
yes. Oh, I have one guy in the US that has Facebook that he wants me to help him write his book, so he sends me bits and pieces of his book on Facebook. to read through and edit. So it's like I don't have Facebook at work, but he does.
Isn't that crazy? It's crazy. Yeah. You know what we do for them in a way. I just I'm at a loss. Could you? And then another thing that's crazy is how come these guys in for life, that quite a few of them have killed so many, they end up with girls sending them letters and wanting to marry them.
Do you know, a lot of killers don't like the groupies, and a couple of people thought that's where I was headed, but obviously it's not, because I do research and all of that and believe.
I should have asked if you married one first.
No. And there has been some authors that have. I keep a bit of distance. I mean, I've had proposals and all of that, and I've cut that down very, very quickly. But there's a lot that do that. I mean, I've spoken to people who, you know, oh, Jeffrey Dahmer was only a gay serial killer because he didn't meet me, you know.
Oh.
They think that they can turn them and all these weird and wonderful things, and they're besotted by the literal worst of the bad boys. You know, but I don't understand that. To me, these are killers who I have an interest in seeing where their sliding door process happens. That's my interest with a lot of these violent criminals. I want to know how they went from being an innocent kid to now on death row. And so it's about that process. But these people literally think that they're going to marry these killers, and some do. I had a girl send me a whole stack of stuff from several serial killers the other day, because she had gotten too close, and welfare were going to take her kids from her and all this sort of stuff, because she was besotted with several serial killers. And she goes, I have to, like, cut ties with these people, so can you just take all this stuff so it's not in my house? You know, because that's the only way that she could stop herself from continuing down that path. And it's like, wow, really?
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of sexy bad boys out there. You don't need to go looking in prisons.
Especially when they're away for life. Look at that Bambi, 25, that was marrying Charles Manson before he died.
Oh,
I mean, you know, it's insane.
Well, it's like, the celebrity syndrome.
Yeah, it's... If you're really desperate for being famous, I think that's... And that's your only opportunity. Obviously, you didn't get onto reality TV shows, so you have to go and hook up with a serial killer. Okay, whatever.
Well, that could be the new series, hooking up with a serial killer.
Hey, oh, you know what? I bet.
I could see it on A&E. Right after The Bachelorette, it'll be hooking up with a serial killer. And they'll pick a serial killer, and he's got like 12 girls to meet. And you know, it's
and
as
then
weird.
You have the housewives.
Yeah, housewives of the serial killers.
The serial housewives of Beverly Hills.
Or it could be something, you know, like that date, marry, kill, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, but it's funny, but it's not. It's kind of, it's one of those things that could happen, and that's why it's not so funny, but because really it's laughable.
Yeah, but it will happen. Maybe we need to produce it, but yeah. You know, because there is groupies out there that would go on that show in a heartbeat. I'm in a couple of groups that I'm in just to watch how these sorts of people work, and they're all like, "Oh, he didn't ring me today," and you know, apparently he got put into solitary. And I'm thinking, really, there's a reason for this. I can't believe that you guys are. You know,
I want his baby. I want his baby.
Oh, yes.
Oh, that would be, that's just too much for me.
Are you really up to the challenge? Because look how he turned out. That's 23 of those chromosomes in your kid. Do you really want to take those odds?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and you look at the offspring of serial killers, they're not happy about it. So, you know, BTK's children spoke out, and Jesperson's daughter spoke out, and all of these sort of people. But there's these groupies out there that are besotted that, yeah, want to go and get that condom from the prison toilet and turkey baste it, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I know. Wow. It's crazy just to Just craziness.
Where do we go with this conversation?
Oh, that's what we do. We like to have fun here.
I love it. Love it.
We like to have a good time. We don't want, I don't want to ask the same old standard questions. I mean, we want.
I love it.
We want to get into the real world here. That's what we're doing here, you know. So some of your other books here, like what's the kind of thing you look for when you decide to write a book? What is it? What is the subject, or what is the thing that captures you?
Briefly, I think it's about the why. As I said before, I'd like to know about their sliding door moment. How did they get to this point? What happened? I mean, I was talking to Edward Spreitzer, who's one of the Chicago guys, and he said, you know, when I was a teenager, I wanted to become an aged care helper. You know, he wanted to go into aged care facilities and, you know, do the daily cleaning, feeding, you know, talking to the oldies that are in homes. And then he ended up going and torturing young women. It's like, how does that happen? So it's, I like to see what happens in those times where they go from their dreams of being a good person to becoming a torturer. And for people like that, it's sometimes about the influence of others, and sometimes it's about that sometimes their fantasies overrun their reality and they just follow on that because their line in the sand becomes obliterated and they don't understand where good ends and evil starts. And so they sort of blur it to a point that it becomes natural and they think it's an okay thing to do.
Yeah. You know, good ends and evil starts. That's at the drive.
It's very blue. Yeah, yeah.
Now, what area are you going into next? What are you going to? What's your next book going to be about?
Oh, I have about 54 manuscripts currently. Wow. I'm looking at all different things because I get excited about a topic, and so I do that for a while, and then I think, yeah, I need to do something different, so I jump around a bit. I'm writing a book on abductions, and some have good outcomes, some have bad outcomes. So there's things like J.C. Lee Dugard, who after 18 years was found. Still not a great outcome, but she's alive.
But she was found.
Yeah, exactly. But there's other cases. We have a big case here, a boy that was abducted and they didn't find him for 10 years. He died and it took the police to go undercover to get the killer to confess. So there's a lot of cases that go both ways. And so that book is one I'm working on. I'm also working on one on, school shootings. So looking at things like Sandy Hook and Columbine, purely because the FBI files on those cases are so fascinating that I started to write. I didn't know I was going to write that book, but it sort of happened. There's a few others. I'm writing a book on serial killers before Jack the Ripper, because everyone seems to think Jack the Ripper was the first, and he certainly wasn't even close, as you guys know. Yeah. So just looking at some of those older cases, I have a love of history. So I like delving into, you know, ancient Rome and things like that. So yeah, I'll be doing a whole lot of that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fascinating. If you can incorporate history and get something more, I sort of like that myself, and have quite a few books going at the same time too, always.
Yeah, I think it keeps you fresh. I think I know a lot of authors that get bogged down because they're focusing on one book and you can get lost, and I think it becomes a point that it almost becomes a stale process. So I like to bounce around purely because it keeps it exciting and new, and I hit it with vigor and I think, yes, let's do, you know, Columbine today, and then tomorrow I'll go, let's look into H.H. Holmes. And so it sort of keeps it all fresh.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have any big influences that write? Do you read any other particular true crime writers?
Oh, I read them all. I actually have a personal library. I have about 15,000 books. So I love writing. I love authors. I love reading. So I mean, like most true crime authors, I started with Anne Rule. So one of the first true crime books I ever read was Small Sacrifices. So that was the first one. Oh, there's so many, So, Al, I've got a couple of your books. So.
Oh. Okay, now we're talking.
Yep. No. Yep. Yeah. Yep. So, I've got your Canada ones. So,
yeah.
What is yeah? Oh, now you put me on the spot. Jim Garrison's On the Trial of the Assassins, because I'm a JFK conspiracy theorist. Was an early one too. Oh, and of course, John Douglas and Mark Olshaker's Mindhunter was
fascinating.
That was a pivotal moment in my life.
Yeah, they were great on the show too. The fascinating people.
Yeah, love their books.
Yeah. Well, here we go. It's coming close to an end. Let's give out your website and contact information, so if people have a story they want to pass on to you, or maybe some information, what would they do?
Well, I'm on all social platforms, so you can get me anywhere under Amanda Howard. On Twitter, I'm Amanda Howard 73. My websites are monsterswhomurder.com and also amandahoward.com.au. Or you can email me at amanda@amandahoward.com.au. I'm always open to emails. I get lots anyway. But yeah, on Facebook, I'm there. I'm on Instagram, all those places. So I'm happy to chat. I have lots of people ask me for opinions on cases. And because I'm an Aussie, I often come at it at a different perspective than my US counterparts. So I'm always happy to share my insights.
Fantastic. Well, we'll have all that linked up on our website as well, as well as your books. And we really appreciate being here. Amanda Howard.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
To find out more about our show, guests, or listen to a previous show, visit our website at www.somethingweirdmedia.com.
Have been completed.
The end!
By George, he's got it! It is the end!
I'll see you.
If you're lying to me, I'll be back.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.